Hello, and welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, October 17th, otherwise known as National Wear Something Gaudy Day. You two look to be pretty normally dressed. I can only see the tops of your heads, though. What's going on below the neck?
Well,
rhinestones?
Chris, I would say for you, the only thing occasionally, just even a hint of gaudy would be
shoes.
Sneakers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's t-shirt and jeans, baby.
From the ankle up, you think Chris is a normal guy.
Then you get
then
down.
Then you look down.
Watch out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're all pretty much, for the most part, kind of t-shirts and jeans guy. Ben, I'd say you're the most like Steve Jobsian.
Outrageous.
No, I was going to say, like, you probably open his closet and it's like literally the same thing 30 times over.
That's true. So in general, I'm like pretty basic with like jeans, and I got like my own t-shirts and my Henley collection, extensive Henley collection.
You're like Dexter.
Henley connoisseur.
It's robust.
And very excited to announce I have a Henley sponsor that's coming
up.
Oh,
nice.
Yes. Yeah,
he's like, I got dark gray, I've got dark blue, I've got black.
Medium gray, I got a heather gray, I got a charcoal gray, I got a slate gray.
Who's the sponsor? What do you got?
RevTown Jeans is going to be my new exclusive apparel sponsor.
Dang, you should always refer to him as RevTown Jeans and Henley's.
Yes.
Make sure you get that in there.
But I think, like, for me, my philosophy for clothes is, for the basics, I'm like pretty simple. I don't get the cheapest. I get what I like and then get a lot of them. And then where I sort of splurge is on like outerwear. Like, I like nice jackets.
There you go. Looks like you're wearing one right now. You guys are in some cold weather right now, right? Is it cold there? I don't even know.
It's not too bad. So right now, me and Mike are in New York. We're working on the studio project for Andrew Schultz and all of his various podcast enterprises. And we actually had a very celebrity-filled morning. So
nice.
Forgive the name dropping.
Let's hear it.
But it was actually really cool because we went and checked out all the studios where they shoot The Brilliant Idiots and The Breakfast Clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we got to meet Charlemagne and some of the Breakfast Club people. Got to meet the comedian Joy Coy.
Joe Coy.
Oh, Joe
Close.
Coy.
Yeah. Oh, Joy Coy.
No, Joe Coy.
Yes. Joe Co.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Joy Co.
There you go.
Everyone's very nice.
So were you watching them podcast or like radio?
Yeah,
or?
we basically just sat in on an episode, since we're sort of building out the podcasting suite that Andrew Schultz is going to be in with Charlemagne and a couple of other shows that they do. We just wanted to kind of like get a vibe and a feel for sort of how they produce a show, because we've been doing that for a while, but we also do it over Google Hangouts.
Right.
And so we wanted to see basically how the pros do it.
Yeah, what's it like? What's the setup?
Bro, I'll tell you, the secret is just they're all in the same room together. It's really convenient.
So nice.
It's conducive to being able to like really go back and forth with each other.
Right.
But aside from that, dude, it was really simple. It was Shure SM7Bs, which is sort of like the standard broadcasting mic that everybody uses. And it's just sitting around a table with boom arms. And so it's not anything crazy. The big difference that they have is they've got a guy off to the side that's sort of their producer that's running the switchboard for all of the cameras, and they've got a couple of guys that are just running cameras. But when it comes down to the audio, which is what we do and what they do, we're pretty much in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not today. Today we're basically in an empty warehouse with one microphone, me and Ben. So
right.
There's a lot more echo than normal, so forgive us for that. But when it comes down to our day-to-day recording, it's really, really similar. It's cool to see that we're really not that far off from what, you know, people are making in the iHeartRadio building.
Right.
Yeah, I think the big difference is they're simulcasting or simul recording.
Yeah,
for video too. I think that's the big difference from this, like an overall strategy, is that for us, video came first, that's separate from the podcast. And the podcast is sort of like the news and roundup of what we've all been building for the week. Whereas with them, it's like they start with sort of the long format conversation, release that in both audio and video, and then their kind of social content is like the chopped up little video clips.
That makes sense. It's funny because like it seems like there's sort of the way that the podcast world has evolved, there's sort of two branches. There's like the very produced, storytelling, highly edited, serial, you know, type podcast, whatever. And then there's like the just like it's a conversation. And you always assume that those conversation ones, that like there would be just zero editing in there. That's what I would have thought going in, at least. And then like after we started doing it and we're editing ourselves for the longest time and now have an editor for it, you realize that it does need some editing still. But I feel like most of that probably comes because of the fact that we're not in the same room. It's almost like getting totally. Rid of the like technological deficiencies that it creates.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to avoid sort of like dead air or awkward silences stepping when on there's each not other. Like a half a second of latency between us or right, something yes. like that. So yeah, that is definitely, I think, the big difference between sort of what we're doing and what they're doing. But we really have the benefit of being able to talk about the things we're doing and talking about design and building and stuff instead of having to be forced to talk about what's happening in the news or like right. we don't have to give a review of the movie The Joker or right. something like that. We're not forced to sort of hit whatever kind of pop culture thing is happening. We get to talk about what we're building and then the sort of the tributaries that stem off of that.
Right.
But our baseline conversation seems a lot more guided, which is kind of yeah. fun. I like it.
And I guess the good thing they have going for them is they all pretty much speak professionally. So they're good yes. at it. A lot
yeah,
better
almost
than
as good as us.
Almost. Again. Right, so,
what about you, Chris, though? What are you working on?
Well, actually, before we get into that, let's talk about the Rockler Bentwood Challenge, just because there's about 2 weeks
oh,
left.
Yeah.
It ends at the end of this month. So there's still time to, you know, show your projects off on Instagram, maybe put a video up, whatever else you want to do
and
with it.
We got some bangers coming through.
We did. You
yes,
guys have
do.
Any,
ben,
any
hit yours
anything
first.
Cool
what you
seen?
I got, it's a simple one. I really like this one because it's a very simple way to show off how visually dramatic bent lamination can be. And it's by Southard, S-O-U-T-H-A-R-D, and Sawdust. Southard and Sawdust. And it's a Mobius strip light box. He steam bent the light fixture. And it's very sculptural. It looks like a trophy that lights up, but it's funny. It just looks like futuristic driftwood.
Yeah,
or,
exactly.
A really fancy wooden piece of calamari.
Wow. Yeah, it almost reminds me of the movie Arrival. I don't know why that shape reminds me of that.
Right, because it looks like it just kind of landed on its end.
And it's sort of floating, too. Yeah, yeah. There's like, it's acting like gravity doesn't affect it.
It's got that wood spaceship kind of quality to it.
that classic wooden
spaceship.
That we're
all so familiar with.
those flying wood hitters.
Yeah, could I go now?
Yeah.
I got one that I wanted to shout out.
Go for it.
We didn't get to shout out any projects last week because, well, we were bad about it, but this video came out from our good buddy at Mortgage and Miter, Chris Crawford.
Up north. Chris of the North.
That's right.
Excellent project.
It yes. was a great project, and it was something that I was very excited to share. He basically built a bent wood office chair, and he pretty much made every component of it.
It's pretty
Whenever
impressive.
I first saw the forms that he made early on in the challenge, I thought he was just going to basically make the seat portion and the arms, but he made the entire base. The only sort of prefabricated parts that he had are the wheels.
That would be pretty crazy if he made
those.
It's one
of those hero projects. Like, it's a high degree of difficulty, so many steps.
And executed really, really well.
It's a really beautiful, the profile is so thin too.
Yeah.
It's always impressive when you see, because it kind of looks like, you know, the profile is similar to a chair that you would see made out of like tube steel or plastic. But mm-hmm. the wood one's actually thinner than the typical office plastic ones.
Yeah.
So it just looks really light and elegant. It's a, excellent project. Yeah.
And my favorite part about it is he used casters that are like rollerblade wheels.
Yeah. Mm. They'd be thinner.
Can really get cooking on the, scooting around the office, have some races or something. This thing's going
to
perform.
That's what I was about to say. You know I would be gliding so fast and everywhere.
Mike's
people
like,
would
you
be
know
so
I
mad
would,
at me.
You know I would have a broken back within 3 hours.
And a broken chair.
Everybody that worked in an office with me would hate me after just a couple of days with it. But I want to shout out Chris Crawford one more time because after I talked about how great cold brew, like nitro cold brew coffee was.
Oh, yeah.
He gave me the most incredible tip. Did you know
that
if you mix coffee with just a whipped cream canister, it will make cold brew coffee?
Wait, what do you mean mix it with the can? Like, do you put whipped cream
like,
in
blow
it?
Blow it into it.
All right.
So just the aerosol?
I know what you guys are thinking.
You just got to foam it.
Yeah. Okay, well.
I'm guessing, here, I'll vamp while you do whatever you're doing. But is it like you get some kind of canister of aerosol, so it's basically whipped cream can without the whipped cream in it?
Chris, you nailed it. That's exactly it. So they make these things on Amazon. You can buy one for like $20, but it's all right. So this is the title of the product. You ready? 500 milliliter cream dessert cream butter dispenser foam maker.
Oh, dude, we have one.
Exactly.
Yeah, so bring it over.
Yeah, you put...
It's basically...
You put like...
It's like a
get loose.
Yeah, if it's... I can't see your picture, but it's basically you put like sugar and heavy whipping cream. Yeah, that's it. And then you put a little like CO2 canister in it and you break it and then you got your own like... You shake it up and you have homemade whipped cream. So you basically do that, but just don't add any ingredients to it.
Yeah, well, it turns out if you put coffee in it also, it will make a cold brew.
Oh, you put the coffee into the canister and squirt it out. Okay, that's a lot better, because I was picturing literally like you were just, you stuck your coffee into a cup, and then you were sticking that in and just like blowing air into it. I was like, that's going to be messy.
And that's what I thought too. Okay, so he reached out to me, you know, just through DMs, and he was letting me know about this incredible fact.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to try this.
I just kind of like, I would just kept asking him questions. So he just sent me a video of doing it. And I was like, oh my gosh. So shout out Chris Crawford. Great project in the Rockler Bentwood Challenge. And also great fun fact with the Nitro Cold Brew tips.
So basically you guys had the conversation that we just had, except for I played your part and you played his part.
And your amazement and wonder was up to par, man. I was I was mind blown.
I'm going to explain this to Dolores later and see if it happens again.
Yeah, exactly. So anybody that's in the audience that had a similar reaction, let us know. We're very excited.
They probably discovered along with me and shared my amazement.
They're like, oh, I have one of those in my kitchen.
We make homemade whipped cream.
All right, Chris, what's your project?
Mine is going to be from Workshop Edits, who we talked about a couple of weeks ago because he did that similar project that I did with like this trying to splinter the leg with epoxy. So he's got more wood and epoxy and some metal actually too. He did a metal base. So it's a coffee table. And I haven't watched the video yet. I've only seen the Instagram post. So I'm going to go watch the video after. But it's like he got a bunch of strips that he kind of steam bent. And then it looks like he put them in a form that's kind of shaped like the way that like a live edge slab would be. So it's got like a crotch in it and everything. And then poured.
Yeah, get that crotch.
It's got a nice crotch shot facing right towards the camera in his thumbnail. And then he like poured in a bunch of epoxy. So it's a mix of bent strips and epoxy basically that are in the shape of a live edge slab.
Out really cool.
Yeah, it looks
good. I did in fact watch the video.
And?
But it was really cool to see. Like what you said, he pretty much hit every kind of medium and material that there is.
Yeah. He's been crushing it. Like I really like the way that stool came out. This one looks great. Like I think that guy's just like hitting his stride and like going to blow up soon.
So check out Workshop Edits on YouTube, Instagram, everywhere.
He's pretty close by too. I think he's in like South Orange County. So maybe I'll have him up for something sometime.
Nice. Yeah, I remember he came through whenever we did a quick meet and greet sort of get together, whatever you want to call it, out in Whittier whenever we were all together.
Good times. All right. What do you guys want to talk about? Want to tell us more about your New York trip?
Well, before we do that, I'd like to give a big thanks to this episode's sponsor, HoneyBook.
Get that honey.
Do you run your own business? Well, let's be real. When you started, you probably didn't dream about all the admin tasks, back-end work, drafting proposals and contracts, tracking down payments, invoicing, all of this. It probably wasn't a part of your vision. That's why you need HoneyBook.
HoneyBook is an online business management tool that organizes your client communications, bookings, contracts, and invoices all in one place. HoneyBook makes it simple to run your business better. Mike, you really need this.
Hey.
Professional templates, e-signatures, and built-in automation keeps everything on track and makes you look good. That's really important to me too. It's like, I don't want to just look like I'm basic Excel guy just sending over black line silhouetted spreadsheets. I want everything to represent my brand and my business.
That's right. And they can even work with all the services that you're using already. So whether you've got email lists on MailChimp or you're using Gmail and Excel, maybe Google Suites, even QuickBooks, you can consolidate and integrate all these services into HoneyBook seamlessly.
It's the number one choice for client and business management for freelancers and business owners. So save time and do more of what you love, which in our case, building, making awesome videos with HoneyBook.
That's right. And right now, HoneyBook is offering our listeners 50% off when you visit honeybook.com/modernmaker. Once again, that's honeybook.com/modernmaker. Payment is super flexible and the promotion applies whether you pay monthly or annually. So get the plan that fits your business best. Go to honeybook.com/modernmaker, honeybook.com/modernmaker for 50% off your first year. This isn't a month trial. This isn't a 3-month deal. This is for a full year. It's worth it. Check it out.
Get it.
Thanks, HoneyBook.
Well, now that we paid our editor with that ad read, what are we talking about for this week's episode? Do we have a topic or are we riffing?
Let's riff.
Freeballing right now?
We're freeballing.
All right. All right.
So we've been walking these here streets of New York for a minute.
Yes, we've been on the streets of New York for quite a while.
Mike's, are you shooting with the film again?
Yeah, I got my film camera with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I'll tell you what. So let's just talk about that for a minute, because I think 2 weeks ago, my obsession was myself. My current obsession is...
That's every week.
I just gave myself like so many shout outs.
Shout out to me.
You plugged yourself.
Yeah. Don't say that.
Go plug yourself.
I just gave myself so many shout outs because I was like, yeah, I'm shooting film. It's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. And so I got some roles developed from the Makesgiving weekend and they came out.
They were good.
Vintage-y.
Pretty decent. Now I'm gonna be straight up. I lost one or two roles completely because I just either set the ISO wrong, I think, on one of them. So every photo was black. And then on another one, I accidentally opened the back of the camera like halfway through the roll.
Oh,
so everything completely overexposed.
Classic Mike.
But aside from that, I probably had 3 good rolls.
Yeah.
And within each of those good rolls, I probably had about 5 good photos.
Yeah.
So I probably came out with like 10, 15 good shots that I was, you know, at least okay with, if not happy with. And that was like the most awesome feeling because I had to wait for like 12 days after shooting them, maybe 10 days after shooting them to see if any of them actually came out.
Yeah, I think that's probably something that we take for granted. Like, imagine if you had to do that for when you were making videos, like how much more attention you would have to pay to what you were doing.
Also, like the way I shoot, when I take a photo, I take like 50 photos of the same thing.
One of them will be good.
Yeah, one of those will be good. Exactly. And so it made me think, like, I went through all these photos and I realized I did a few things consistently. Like, I would take a shot, but the subject that I was shooting would be completely backlit. Mm-hmm, so I was just taking pictures of silhouettes. And if I was looking at an LCD screen or something like that, I would have obviously known.
Right.
But really the only thing that I had was a light meter. And so if I'm shooting something backlit, there might be enough light in the frame to expose it properly, but I'm just going to be exposing to the sky. I'm not trying to, but not exposing my actual subject. And there was a few other things where I kind of made the same consistent errors. And so it was cool being completely green at a new hobby and kind of starting from day one building blocks.
Right. Yeah, I think that that's actually like the biggest benefit to digital, or not the biggest, but one of the biggest benefits to digital is how it speeds up the learning curve because you get like real-time feedback. Whereas if this was all that existed, you get more reps and you, like right now, your feedback is basically delayed by 2 weeks. So you might not even remember, like, what was I doing?
Right. That's why like 3D printing is great. It's better as a design tool than it is as a making tool. Is that it lets you do that rapid prototyping and, you know, speed up the learning curve rather than sending it to a, you know, a factory or like some sort of prototyping lab.
Right.
Yeah, that speed of iterating is really important.
What the heck is going on there? Thunder?
So it's actually interesting. What we're waiting for right now are these acoustic panels, because you just heard a cart roll down from one of the other businesses.
Okay, so are you guys in where the studio that you guys are going to be building out right now? That's what this empty
Correct.
Room is?
Yeah, so we're in this like, you know, it's just all drywall and hardwood floors, and it's an old brick warehouse building.
Looks like really tall ceilings too.
Yeah, 14-foot ceilings.
Oh, wow.
So it's terrible acoustics for what we're currently doing, and that's going to be part of the build videos that we do is like, how do we acoustically isolate this for professional podcasters?
Yeah.
And we're using some really cool tech. Mike, do you want to... tell a little bit about the technology that's being used here.
Mike, did you have experience in this from like your schooling that you did? Did you learn about this kind of stuff?
A little bit, just to know the basics of like how to treat a room, you know what I mean? Like what the proper steps are, but nothing that we're doing is over the top engineered because we've got so many hard surfaces that just getting rid of some of the just empty drywall,
right.
Plain wood floors, and really, really high ceilings.
We're working with a professional audiovisual company out of Florida, and we're also working with Overtone Acoustic, and they make acoustic panels. And they actually should be getting Brad from Overtone should be arriving anytime. Might even interrupt the podcast a little bit.
We'll have a guest.
And we're coordinating the shipment of all these panels. And so I designed this like pattern, and then they lay a fabric over a foam, and like bond it together. And then they water jet out all these custom shapes that they did. Nice. And then Mike and I are going to install those on the walls and a few on the ceilings.
Yeah, thanks for letting me take that over. I appreciate that. That was great. No, I'm kidding.
You did an excellent job there, Mike.
But yeah, so we've got so many hard surfaces and we've got so much open space that in a lot of spaces to treat it, you actually want to diffuse the sound and you want the room to be more lively. And so a lot of times you'll have different diffusion panels and things to just spread the sound and keep it from just going back and forth against the same wall.
Right.
But with this room and this space particularly, we don't really have that as a problem. We just need to cut down on the hard surfaces and minimize the overall reverb. And so realistically, it's just about softening the surfaces. And so, you know, furniture goes a long way. Once you get chairs and sofas and everything, that's going to help. But rugs, just simple panels along the walls, a sort of drop ceiling thing that we're going to do is going to help a lot also over where we're recording. But realistically, it doesn't need to be over-engineered for this space because just doing the simple things are going to go so far.
Right. Can too much padding and too much, you know, kind of absorption like hurt the sound?
No, not for what we're doing because everything is just close miking a voice.
Gotcha.
Now, if you're in a live room, like for instance, say you want to record
a symphony.
Easy. Let's just say you want to record live drums. Yeah. Easy. If you're wanting to record live drums, oftentimes you want to find a room that has good acoustics.
Gotcha.
Because you close mic everything. That way you get the ability to sort of like isolate each one of, you know, your snare drums, your toms, your kick drum, your cymbals. You want to be able to isolate those and sort of EQ them independently. But the thing that brings a good record together, especially something with a bunch of live instruments, is the room mics, the things that like capture the body of the instrument completely, not just one isolated sound. And so if you're doing live instruments or drums or something like that, yeah, you want a space that's been tuned well and that does have good acoustics. But let's say you're recording a show like this, that's the last thing you want. You want it to be no echoes, no reverberation at all. You just want it to be clean, cut, and dry.
Yeah, I would guess that for something like what you're doing where there's essentially one use for it over and over, it's probably a little bit more rigid and like just do these things and you're good. Whereas like in a recording studio, there's a science to it, but then it's also like an art. And that's why you'll, like anytime you see like, you know, behind the scenes or whatever of them recording an album, there's just like blankets all over the place. And like, let's try setting it up this way and let's try this. And
exactly. That's like part of the fun of it though, because a lot of studios, you'll have these things called gobos. And I don't know why they call them that, but they're basically like little false walls that they'll be like 8 inches thick. Some of them will be like 2 feet thick, but they're basically boxes. Maybe they're 4 feet high, 6 feet high. And they're just stuffed with insulation.
Okay.
And so if you're in a live room and maybe you've got two guitars recording along with a drummer all together to sort of maybe get scratch tracks, or, you know, if they're wanting to just have a live room where they're all playing together, you'll basically like build little caves around guitar amplifiers or around certain instruments so that you can close mic something and get that isolated audio when you need it. But you'll also have room mics that you can sort of let all of the instruments bleed together through to create like a really natural sounding environment.
Sometimes when you see people playing live, even they have like transparent little like walls set up by the drums, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Like churches, especially. Like if you go to a church with like a worship band, they'll like stick them in a plexiglass cage.
Get them in the cage.
It's crazy.
Drumming is a sin. Put them in the Lucite box.
With drumming with too much dynamic range is a real sin.
Go to hell for that.
You could. You don't want to hit the cymbals that hard, man.
No.
But yeah, so it's been a lot of fun and it's definitely like it's an interesting challenge because typically we're just sort of building to suit like a function rather than to suit a space or to suit a activity, you know?
Sound is usually not in the consideration of building things.
Yeah, we just want to build something. Yeah, we just want to build something that's a shape we like that does the thing we want it to do.
Yeah. And the other cool thing that we have to figure out is we have to build a stage for one of the shows so that the interview and the interviewee are elevated. Mm. And so we have to build up like a little bit of a wood deck that's going to have a plywood top. And for that, we have to figure out how to make sure it doesn't creak. Because if somebody moves around on the chair, you don't want to get those sort of creaky, farty sounding noises, you know.
Not that kind of
show.
Picked
up with these high-tech beam mics.
Those SMB7s or whatever Mike said earlier in the...
Oh, yeah. That's the other cool part about this whole studio thing that they've got set up. So Schultz hired, or whatever, this very professional audiovisual company to set a lot of this stuff up. Mm-hmm. Things that are way over my head. And they've got this microphone system called a Beam mic system. And it's made by Shure, the same company that makes a lot of the great microphones in the world. And it's just a flat panel. It looks like a drop ceiling panel. It's about 2 feet by 2 feet, maybe 18 inches by 18 inches.
Mm-hmm. And it's a microphone?
It's a flat corrugated piece of metal to the eye.
Okay.
But internally, it's got a certain number of microphones that you can like digitally position to like pinpoint anywhere in the room.
Oh, wow.
And so the idea is if you've got two people on stage or if you've got four people behind a table, somehow you can point individual microphones at each person and be able to isolate their audio with almost no bleed. That's as long cool. as the room doesn't have too much bleed.
Wow.
Which is insane. And so this is one of those things where I have a healthy amount of skepticism on whether they'll work. Worst option is you just buy some microphones and do it traditional. Right. But I love the fact that they're going all in and trying this, because if it does work, it could revolutionize podcasting as we know it.
Our
boy Schultz really swings for the fences. He's really going for it with his new studio and really trying the sort of newest stuff that's available. And yeah, I think it should work good. I mean, we have enough acoustic paneling. I mean, Overtone, you know, contributed probably over $20,000 worth of acoustic panels. Like, this is a really high grade product that we're going to be installing, and that should do a lot. We have like a ton of coverage. I think the walls will be like 50 or 60% of the surface area on the walls will be covered with these panels. Mm-hmm. And then we'll use rugs and other stuff in between.
100% of the floors will be covered in rugs.
Yeah, the creak in the floors is what I think will be the most annoying.
Yeah.
Just the fact that these are, you know, this building's probably over 100 years old. And when you step on any place on the floor, there's a little bit of a, well, let me give you a demo.
Oh, there you go.
Sounds like it's got a heartbeat. We got a little Edgar Allan Poe going here. A fart beat. Very nice pun work, Mike.
Thanks, buddy.
Good stuff.
beat you to that one, Chris.
I was heading there. I was taking the high.
Yeah, overall, it's a lot of fun. We probably don't have any more updates beyond that. I actually got in this morning. I'm fresh off a red eye.
Nice.
Ben has been here for a day or two ahead of me, sort of getting the lay of the land and talking with the audiovisual guys that have already been here for a little while. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited because this time next week, we're going to have the majority of what we're here to do finished.
Right.
And so it'll just be cool to figure out what actually ends up happening, because basically all day we've just been running around looking at the different spaces we need to fill up and sort of brainstorming ideas for them, because we know we need, you know, a feature wall so that when people come in to do a show, they've got a good place to take a photo with the host, whoever the host is. And,
gotcha.
You know, each set needs a unique table to sit at, and the production team needs a desk so that they can kind of have their little hub. And so it's cool. It's a lot of furniture with really with unique criteria and sort of like success fail points, but challenges are fun.
Yeah, it should be good. We're going to have a crazy week of building.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, oh, I brought the shaper with me. So I get to really test out my hypothesis that this could be a really great travel tool. Mm-hmm. I took the shaper as my carry-on bag, or no, as my carry-on, as my checked bag. So it has like a really good case. It's pretty similar to the cases for Festool.
Okay. The sustainers.
With that kind of like, yeah, that rotating latch thing.
Yeah.
So it's got our hands full. Right now we're going to go pick up a set of tools. So we're, you know, can't bring all the handheld right. power tools with us. So we'll just buy some locally and then take them back with us. But so yeah, just, you know, by the time this podcast is up, we'll probably just be in the middle of building. So
Instagram.
Keep an eye out on our Instagram stories and we'll be updating as we go.
Totally. Nice. What's happening in your world, Chris?
Ooh, I am just finishing up that splinter leg floating table thing that we've talked about. So
that we've alluded to so many times.
I know. It's finally, like, I'm literally putting finish on it after we record this, and then it's done and I will move on to the next project. But awesome. It came out pretty cool. Like the splintering, I had to do a surprising amount of like testing to finally like find the best way to break the pieces and get it to come out good. Luckily I had
karate chops.
That was the one. Just karate chopped right through an inch and a half thick piece of beech. No, but actually,
yeah.
I don't think we talked about this on here, but what ended up working best was clamping it all down, like weakening it from the end grain, and then getting one of the long clamps and like twisting it. So you have a bunch of leverage on it. And basically
twisting makes sense too, because you separate the fibers before you break them.
Right. So I ended up with a lot of like, by the end, I was getting a lot of pieces that like really had like long splinters in them, which is what I wanted. Whenever I tried to like just snap them, that won't come off on podcast, but you know, picture if I was just snapping it over my knee.
Held up both of his wrists and then rotated them.
Picture that my thumbs are pointing towards each other, and now I'm gonna add one move, I'm pointing them both towards the ceiling.
Snap.
That was the
and
move.
Listen, if you really wanted to go over the top, you could have thrown up a knee too. You could have like kneed through it.
You know what? Check out my Instagram. I'm gonna put a video of me miming that exact motion on Thursday. No, but whenever I was doing that, like it ended up being very man-made looking the way that it would break. Because like obviously if you could do that probably to a thick piece, like if you had a machine or whatever that could do that, it'd probably look cool, but you'd have to be Bo Jackson to do that as a person, and I am not him. So that wasn't an option for me.
You know, as like a kid, you just have like a lot of use for just sticks. Like you're always just looking for a good stick.
Yeah, throw that in the spokes or whatever.
Right. And when you try to break one off of like a tree that's still green, some sticks like snap right off and you're like, nice, I got this badass stick. Nice. And then other ones, they snap, but they're still stuck to the tree and it's like all connected by like bark and sinew. Mm-hmm. I imagine that's what it'd be like for that movie, like 27 Hours or whatever, where the guy had to cut his own arm off. Oh, yeah. It's not like he just cut through it like a piece of celery with a chef's knife. It's like you have to cut through like layers and then like skin parts.
And he also did it with like a pocket knife, like a multi-tool, bone. I think, right?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Like it's not like he had a big old like
machete,
like Molly Hatchet over here.
Well,
like,
the other thing that would be interesting, Chris, would be if you like dehydrated the wood even more. Like you put it like extra kiln dry to make it real dry and snappy.
Beef jerky.
Yeah. Because like, I mean, it's funny because you're basically trying to do the opposite of the bent wood challenge.
Yeah, that's true. I'm trying to make it break. Challenge.
So if wood and heat like improve its bendability, dehydration and cold freeze it like
there
the
you
Terminator.
Go. Yeah, exactly. Ooh. I should have just taken all of Mike's failed attempts.
Let's try that
from
with
his...
like liquid ice or no
liquid ice,
dry ice,
aka
water, cold water.
Dude, I'm tired.
Okay, but I gotta say this. Now that this conversation is already derailing,
let's dry ice some wood and snap it.
I'm down with that. Every time, Chris, you talk about this project, have you seen Napoleon Dynamite?
Yeah.
All right. So I always just think of when they're trying to sell the Tupperware and Kip like goes to show off the durability of the Tupperware that they're trying to sell. And he puts it underneath the tire of Uncle Rico's van and just completely mows it over. And he's just like, dang it. And then just drives off. That scene is replayed in my head like 20 times throughout this conversation.
Well, it's the opposite of that because it's being impossible to break something.
Exactly.
I think dry, like freezing it would be interesting.
Yeah, but did you try to break it with a camper van yet or no?
I tried a Airstream trailer, I think that was the part is I didn't have a camper. The bus, El Reno would have handled it. Oh, it can handle
I bet the
ridge line
could have done it. Man, I believe in it.
I don't know, man. It's
beefy.
It's a beef.
You don't want
chair.
Tire marks though. You'd have to like cover it or something.
Okay, wait. So here's the part where I was most proud of myself for this project was so I ended up doing it. Just picture a right angle where there's 2.5 inch pieces that are going to be joined together, and both of them are epoxy. And so in my original, when I was testing it, I actually like put a domino in there. And then I was like, you know, I don't really want a domino at the joint. Like I want it to just be epoxy to epoxy. And so I was like, well, I had it where the leg is on the bottom part of the stretcher. So like it'll handle weight no problem because it's all just like compression stress that would be on the leg. So it'll handle, I'm sure, thousands of pounds that way. But like in terms of being able to shear, all that was holding it together was essentially just like, it's like a butt joint. And it was just like epoxy joining it together, which like I don't know how strong it was. I mean, it was strong enough that like, you know, you pick it up and move it around and work it and everything, and it's not going to fall apart. But you know, if somebody were to like slide trying to like move the piece of furniture or something, who knows what's going to happen there. So I was like, well, I want to reinforce it somehow. So then the idea that I had that worked pretty good, it seems like, was basically after it was assembled, I just got the biggest drill that I could and just drilled right through both pieces as
talking
deep as I could.
Girth.
Both thickest, longest drill you can find. 3/8, yeah. Baby. And then I mix, and that's an upcut. I don't want to brag, but so anyway, I drilled that out deep and long and then poured in more epoxy. So I basically created like an epoxy dowel that went through the two pieces. I was like, I'm not a genius, but I'm doing something right here.
And then you just look at the camera and go, woodworking.
Yeah.
That should be all epoxy projects. Yeah, it's actually, me and Sean were talking about that because he was working on an epoxy project at the same time that should be out on Saturday, which came out really cool. It's basically like a cocktail table that's got a very UFO-inspired theme to it. So he put some LEDs in it, and it's like the light shines out from in between. It's like an epoxy sandwich, which is catching on, sweeping the nation.
Well, speaking of epoxy, our boy White Mike here has been experimenting with his epoxy terrazzo.
Terrazzo.
Yeah, man, it's going along really well.
It was sort of inspired by the old Sorry Girls on YouTube. I saw that they tried to make terrazzo and they failed big time, but they embraced the fail and they made a really good video out of it. But it sort of got my gears turning, like I've said for a long time on the podcast. I love terrazzo. I want to do something with it. And then while we were doing the whole Makesgiving thing, Johnny Brooke was making, I don't know how many guitars he was making while he was there, but he made an epoxy guitar. And so there was a ton of Total Boat at the house and a bunch left over after the weekend. And so I got some good advice from both Johnny Brooke, Johnny Lambert, and pretty much everyone that was there that had experience with epoxy. So I've just been trying to make epoxy terrazzo, and it finally worked. I basically was able to spread the epoxy really thin. Mm-hmm. And then once it cured, I was able to just basically like shatter it with a hammer. So it would be in little chips.
Oh.
And then I could throw those chips into a form, put new epoxy over top of it. And then once I sort of sanded the surface a little bit, it just revealed all those epoxy chips underneath.
Gotcha. I was wondering how you were doing it, but now that makes total sense. So how thick is like the total thing that you made?
Yeah. So right now I just made little like, they're all varying sizes, but between like 1/2 inch and 3/4.
Okay. Do you think you could make it thinner? Like, do you think it would work at like 1/4 inch?
I don't see why it wouldn't.
Yeah, I would.
So I think there's a few things that might happen. I think it would lose its rigidity, or I'd be concerned about it losing its rigidity, especially if you sand it, because so much heat builds up, it might actually try and melt the epoxy.
Uh-huh.
But aside from that, I don't really see any huge issues, because if you have chips that are sort of weighty enough, thick enough, mm-hmm. they sort of break the surface tension of the liquid epoxy once you pour it, and they sink to the bottom. But if your chips are too thin, then they actually float.
Okay.
And so that was sort of the dividing line of like success and fail over my first couple of experiments, was making sure that the chips that I made off of the first pour were thick and dense enough.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm just thinking, but
who knows? The plan long term is figure out how to do it well, make a video on that, maybe incorporate it into some furniture like a coffee table, and then go for the gusto once I've done that successfully, and maybe do countertops something like that.
I think instead of epoxy chips, you should just throw in some dried flowers.
Or wet ice.
Or
what was it called?
I don't hate it. I don't hate it, but I don't think it's my jam.
Or some little pebbles.
I can't tell if you're trolling me or if you're serious.
Isn't this where the conversation went last time? We were having you throw like Doritos and Apple Jacks and stuff in it.
Gummy bears.
I would do Captain Crunch.
Captain Crunch? Barrels?
Yeah, Crunch berries would look really cool in there.
Oops, all berries. I think this is probably exactly where the conversation went. Then you guys probably asked me, what do I like better, oops, all berries or Pop-Tarts? And I said, well, it depends. Is milk candy? I don't know. Never mind.
No.
And if there is no time loop. And if there is no milk candy, then Pop-Tarts always win, because you could just wash them down with water and they're still just as good.
Just as good.
But unless you're trying to cut your mouth up like crazy, you are not eating Crunch Berries without milk.
Yeah, see, that's what he should have sawed through his arm with, some Crunch Berries.
Or
would have gone right through.
Grape nuts. Oh man, those things mess you up.
You know what? I've never eaten grape nuts as an adult. I would like to try them just to see. I remember I hated them as a kid because the name sounded pretty good. I was like, oh, I like grapes. I'll like grape nuts.
Turned out
I did not.
You know, it's one of those things that I never have eaten grape nuts growing up. I've never tried them before. So I think they died with y'all's generation.
I mean, they're still there, right? They still exist.
Not that I know of.
They're the most space efficient cereal.
Like, yeah, this small box.
Dense or what?
It's basically the consistency of kitty litter. But made with some nondescript grains.
Yeah.
It's like dry oatmeal or something like that.
But
that would be delicious.
It's heavy and dense. So it's like you only fill up a bowl like 1/4 full of them. but you got to let the milk sit for a bit because it's unedible right away.
It's got to infuse.
And this
into
is food?
Their,
yeah, it's got to percolate down into it.
This is a food item? This or is it's not? This isn't repurposed?
This is food from like the same era that was into like Tang.
It's a food slash grout.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of right in that thin sliver of the Venn diagram that those two share.
Oh, Chris.
Yeah.
Since we talked last.
Yeah.
You released your should I buy a table saw, circular saw, track saw, or anything in between video.
You bought them all?
You killed that.
Thank you.
And I don't only appreciate it for the learning resource, you know, for your fans or for the people Googling it. I also appreciate it for the fans of mine that always ask me what tool
Send
I should
them
buy.
Right over there.
Because I have somewhere to direct them now.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to feel rude about either not answering it or giving a short answer. I can just say, listen, everything you need to know, my boy Chris lined it
covered
up.
In this 19-minute video right here for you. It's funny.
It must be nice to have all those options.
The comments on it are like paragraphs. Like everybody's like giving like, here's what I have or here's what I, which is good.
But they're probably
I asked for that. So
they're probably pretty well considered though. It's nobody coming in like, oh, sounds, it would be nice to have all kinds of these tools and stuff.
Just get scissors.
Yeah, exactly. I only work with veneers.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's good.
But I think you killed it. Yeah. You left no stone unturned. I think the coolest part about it though is you laid out the potential scenarios. Because that's what really I think everyone is curious about. They might ask like, hey, do you like your table saw? Or hey, do you like this or that? But realistically, they're sort of asking, should I buy
this? Right.
Yeah. That should be the real question is, should I buy this? And so that was sort of how you wrapped up the video, which I think was a really smart way of doing it.
Yeah. And I tried to also make sure that like, because I mean, the truth is of what I think is like, I like having all of them. Like, I feel like they all serve a different purpose. So it's not like you need to get one or the other, but that's kind of a lazy video to just be like, get them all. And then it's just like blank for 18 and a half minutes. So I tried to convey that too of like, you know, maybe if you're just getting into it, start with this. And I tried to show that like, you know, I kind of did it in a what I think now is a dumb way where I had a table saw and nothing else. So I was like literally making every single cut that I made on that, which is not the most convenient. But then like showing that like, yeah, okay, so I have a track saw. I still use it probably on every project, but I don't use it as much as I would if it was my only tool, obviously. But it just kind of shows you that like, you don't need to have remorse if you get something and then decide you want a table saw later because you're still going to use whatever that other thing is. And I think the bottom line I tried to convey this to is just like, try this stuff out and get something good because a bad table saw will just be so frustrating and they're just not all equal.
Yeah, that's a good point. So whenever we got the rigid table saw over at Maker Ranch, that was a very noticeable improvement because up until that point, aside from the couple experiences that I had using other people's nice table saws, I had really only used portable job site saws that were what you think of when you think of portable job site saws.
Right.
But I didn't really realize that there was sort of a second tier, the sort of table saws that Rigid makes, especially the job site saws that SawStops makes, those sort of things.
You know, it's funny.
I never realized how much nicer having a reliable fence was or having something where I knew that the bed was flat on, all these sort of things. It's one of those things that I was probably blissfully unaware. I was like, I don't need all that. That's silly. I'm doing fine with this. Right. But as soon as I realized what I was missing, I was like, oh, duh. Mike, you were just kind of being dumb. You were
apparently I had never used a table saw that didn't have a soft start on it before. And I flipped that rigid on and man, that thing fires up. It scared the hell out of me.
It's scary.
You could click it on. It
jumps
just like,
a little bit.
Yeah. All right. So here's the question, Chris.
Yeah.
Do you recommend a good job site table saw paired with a circular saw or a equal or similar value track saw and no circular saw?
So in either situation, you have the table saw?
No. So if you have a set amount of money, right?
Okay. Like,
so let's say...
Let's say you have $800. Okay. You can spend those $800 on any table saw that your money could buy, plus a good circular saw. So let's say realistically, you don't have $800, you've got $700.
Okay.
Because we're going to get a good circular saw.
All right. I've already got my answer.
Or are you going to spend that much money on a really good track saw?
I would start with the Craig, I guess if it was $700, I'd get the Craig track saw and then save up and down the road buy the table, since I think the whole table and the tracks on everything is more than $700. And
yeah,
then
that's
get,
a good point.
You probably wouldn't even need a circular saw. Like, I feel like I could get by without it, or I could just get one that was like not the greatest. Like, it's basically just for rough breakdown. And then all my finish cuts would be with the ACS either on the table or off of the table.
The correct answer is you spend $100 on one circular saw, and then you buy 9 angle grinders for $50 each.
Just angle grind everything. Wait, why even get the circular saw?
That was one of the things that you brought up in your video too, was the new track saw that Craig makes. Mm-hmm. And I know you were like really making sure and saying like, I know that they're a sponsor. This isn't, you know, changing the way that I'm saying this to you guys.
Right.
But it's crazy that that thing's like $400, because I've used the Festool one. I've used a Makita track saw as well. And they all do the exact same thing.
Yeah, like it's a legit track saw. It's good.
It's freaking
You don't
nice.
Feel like you're compromising anything with it.
At all. And, you know, the Festool stuff, it's got great dust collection and everything like that. But you could retrofit whatever you need to with any brand.
No, the Craig one is honestly like, so it has the same size vacuum or hose attachment as the Festool one. So I hook my Festool vacuum up to it and it's perfect.
Dude, I'm with you wholeheartedly. I love that thing. It's so great. Would you spend, if you had $1,000, would you spend it on a cabinet saw that costs about $1,000, a job site saw that costs about $1,000, or would you spend it on a track saw and then all the other miscellaneous things that you need to make it more functionable?
I mean,
and just come out closer to $700 instead of $1,000.
So,
like, save a little cash.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a cabinet saw that you can get for that cheap. So you'd have to start looking.
That's what
used.
I'm curious about.
Yeah, I think you'd have to start looking used for that.
What does a good cabinet saw from Grizzly start at? Like $1,200, maybe?
I think more than that. Like when I got mine, which was like 7 years ago, I think even then it was like $1,400. So I'm guessing it's slightly more than that now. There's a smaller one, like there's a hybrid one that's got a shorter fence that like might be, you know, closer to like $1,200 or something. I don't know. Again, I'd have to look. And again, I'm sure that would be fine. Like, that's kind of another thing I said in the videos. I feel like if you don't need to move it and you have the space, like I would always get a cabinet saw over a job site saw because it's basically just a better version of the same thing. But then again, like so much of that depends on space. And I think like this is all coming back to like the whole point of the video is that it's such an impossible question to answer unless you know like exactly what a person wants to do, what their space is like, how much money they want to spend, yada, yada, yada. So it's like, here, this will help you make the decision that I can't answer for you.
Right. Like, what's the best table saw for epoxy projects?
Oh, no doubt. The rigid without a soft start.
Yeah, that's what's always
the hardest starting rigid you can find.
Well, that's what's so funny to me when people ask a question about tools without prefacing it with relative to the applications. They act as if like tools manifest things rather than tools have been designed to meet specific applications.
Yeah. Well, this is an epoxy saw, so
yeah,
you don't want the epoxy mate.
Exactly.
What's the second big tool you would buy? Would it be a bandsaw? Would it be a joiner? Would it be a planer?
I mean,
what's the follow-up to a good table saw?
See, I get like the, okay, here's why I'm a hypocrite anytime that I answer it, is because I literally like did all this research on my own when I was getting into it. And I was like, I'm just buying everything. Like, I know this is where the path leads. I've saved up money
buy
to
all
do
of it.
It. I'm just going to do it. So like, you know,
I respect that.
If you had to choose between just a planer or just a joiner, I would choose a planer because, first off, you can get a lot of boards that are already in good condition where like the only purpose of the planer at that point is just like milling something down to a finished thickness. And then you can also make sleds for it so that you can kind of use it as a joiner. Bandsaw is like, I use it a lot now, but I actually, that was like the one tool that when I started for like, maybe if you would have asked me 2 years after I started, where I felt like I kind of went too heavy straight off the bat was with the bandsaw. Like, I was not utilizing it. And even now, like, honestly, the way that I use it, it's like, it's great and it makes the work a lot faster, but it's like stuff that I could be doing on a jigsaw almost. It would just like be kind of a pain in the butt doing
it. Or you could just do it on like a normal sized bandsaw, not the mega bandsaw that you have or something like that.
Yeah, but I would say it's a fairly late in the game purchase for most people, just because like it's definitely something where you can find a workaround unless you're doing something really specific, like, you know, resawing veneers out of like tall pieces of wood, and you need to be able to make a thin slice of something that's 10 inches wide or whatever. But like, if that's what you're doing, you're not watching my video about what table saw you should buy.
Yeah, my follow-up to a table saw would probably be thickness planer.
angle grinder.
12 angle
grinders. Get out of here.
All right. What have you guys been obsessed with?
Ooh, you guys got anything? You watch any good movies on the flight?
I went and saw The Joker the other night.
Oh, how was it?
Excellent. Everyone should go see it. We'll talk about it more when you guys have seen it.
All right. I'm down with that.
Mike?
Can I say Nitro Cold Brew again? Can that be my obsession?
Bookend it.
I love it. It's... I can't believe it doesn't have any sort of milk or cream in it because it tastes exactly like it does. Like
it
that's
gives
the
it a texture.
Right. It doesn't. I love the taste of black coffee, just plain coffee. I really don't like to add sugar or really anything to it. But yeah, it's that thickness, the like rich thickness that you get out of
a 3/8 drill bit,
a tampered with coffee. But it's just nitro cold brew. It's perfect, man. Nice. And I'm trying to say something that isn't sort of jeopardizing with my adjectives, but it's great. Check it out. And the cool part is more and more coffee shops are sort of adopting it. I know Starbucks is the people that sort of pioneered it, or at least were the people that really brought it to market heavy, but it's been real successful with them. And so all the local coffee shops that I'm aware of out where we're at least are doing it. It's really tasty. It's really great. And apparently you can do it at home too. All you need is a whipper-upper, a dispenser of sorts that we talked about earlier.
Nice. My pick
what about
is,
you?
I got a podcast pick. So it's a 30 for 30 season that came out a little while ago, and it's all about the Donald Sterling Clippers.
Oh, yeah.
Drama. Do you remember all that stuff, Mike?
Yeah, the old racist guy.
Yeah, the old racist guy that owned the Clippers before Steve Ballmer. It's like a 5-part podcast documentary, I guess you'd call it. Very interesting, very good. It's one of those things that like you don't have to be into basketball to enjoy it. It's just like a nice...
Oh, no, those stories are wild.
Right. So, and I think it's like... It's especially cool because like basketball is just about to start up. The Clippers are like favored for the first time in ever. And all of that happened, I don't know, it was probably like 5 years ago now, but it was like during the Clippers' best season ever. It was actually the season where they got eliminated by Mike's homies, the OKC Thunder in the Western Conference Finals. So that's the best season that they've ever had. And like, I think it's hard for people to understand like how much of a little brother and bad the Clippers have always been.
Yeah.
If you haven't lived here.
They've been a joke.
Yeah. They were a laughing stock, and like they finally had a good season. And then that stuff just like all came out while they were playing Golden State in the semi conference final or whatever, the second round of the playoffs. But yeah, it's a very interesting and well-made podcast, so I'd recommend that highly.
I want to check it out. I know that we're not a basketball podcast, and it's definitely not the thing that I'm most familiar with in the world, but I'm very excited for this season. It's going to be a banger.
Too. I know.
The Western Conference, man, it's shaking up big time.
I know. There's like 12 playoff teams and only 8.
And the cool part is, you know, with LA and LA opening against each other, the Lakers are good and the Clippers are good. It's not that they're both bad and it's going to be competitive. It's that they're both good and it's going to be a firehouse.
And the whole league, like there's just so much parity. I always feel like I can go back and like look at since I've followed basketball, which is basically since like the early 90s, in any year, you could probably pick between like 4 teams that you would choose to win the championship. And probably get it right, like 90% of the time. Like the only season I can think of where you couldn't do that would probably maybe Toronto last year. Even then, you probably would have picked them just if you're picking somebody from the East. Like, you know, they're in the top 2 or 3 teams.
A lot of people pick Boston and Warriors
Philadelphia.
Last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but like maybe the year that the Mavericks won, they might have not been in like top 4.
There's like 6 to 8 teams that could legit make the finals.
Yeah, they're so it's like so open this year. Like I think the favorite is the Clippers, and like they pay like 9-1. So there's basically no favorite.
Perfect. It's going to be great. So stay tuned because I'm sure Chris is going to give us weekly updates on the state of the league. It's going to be the state of the league address with Chris.
White Mike.
And White Mike.
I like it.
All right, guys. Well, we appreciate you guys listening to every episode every week. Y'all are amazing. Thanks for making us a part of your trip to work or bringing us along in your workshop. Man, I love that little hook that I've come up with, and I'm definitely going to say it every week.
Very nice.
So stay tuned so you can hear it over and over again. If you haven't given us a review on the iTunes app, we would really appreciate it. It doesn't do anything crazy. It just lets the app know that we're a good show.
And it lets us maintain our dominance as the number one podcast in what category?
The world.
No,
the
arts.
Category of the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Arts
visual
and
arts.
Oh,
visual
arts. Are we still
number
one?
We got to stay up on the visual arts charts.
Yeah. We don't want to let that slip.
But yeah, really, it just lets the app know that we're a good show and, you know, kind of just suggest us more often to people that listen to similar content. So we really do appreciate that. It goes a long way, even though it's not, I don't know. It seems like I ask all the time, and there's a part of me that's like, oh, it's not a really big deal. But then there's the other side of me that says, well, come on, Mike, how many times have you reviewed a podcast? And then I think back and I think,
I've written about 15.
Well, I say not very many times. I've written 2 podcast reviews in my life.
One of them was for Modern Maker Podcast.
None of them were for Modern Maker. So I think to myself, am I asking too much? I've only ever reviewed 2 podcasts in my life. But then I thought, I reviewed my 2 favorite podcasts at the time.
There you go.
And so for anybody that's out there thinking, man, the Modern Maker Podcast is my favorite show, that's who I'm asking. I'm asking you, the guy who really enjoys our episode and puts us in their top 5.
I was going to say top 20. We're in your top
20. Top 20? You know what? If you listen to us at all. No, I'm kidding.
If you're hearing our voice.
I'm sorry, guys, that we've been... I'm sorry that we're rambling so much. Have a great week. Stay in tune for the Rockler Bentwood Challenge finale. Keep the projects coming in. And we will see you next time on the Modern Maker Podcast. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.
Oh, and apologies for the bad audio and sort of all that. We could have done better.
Yeah, sorry.
Whatever. You get what you pay for. No.